pin here. At unfetteredmind.org, you'll find transcripts of this podcast series, and these you can read or download free of charge. The transcripts are divided into small sections with audio clips. This makes it easy for you to listen to the specific passages that catch your interest. If services like these are useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Guru, Deity, Protector, Part 5.
Let's begin with any questions about the practice. No questions.
Case of clear directions.
Oh dear. I'll have to muddy it up next time. John.
Is pride an attribute?
Pride is usually regarded as an emotion.
Why?
You know, I'm just trying to think of it in a positive
way, and through anger, so that you're almost like arrogance. Yeah, pride,
arrogance.
But you're not really suffering from it.
Most of the people I know who are proud aren't suffering from it at all.
That's what I'm saying.
Most of the people I know who get angry don't suffer from it. Everybody else does too. That's the characteristic of a reactive emotion. You're discharging the energy so that you don't get to feel it. Everybody else does. That's why you're expressing it, so you don't have to feel it. So what's the question behind all this?
Well, I got totally thrown off this morning when I came in for an interview. And...
Who did that?
Because you turned it around.
Yes.
Something that was more that I could
act. Now keep going. This is important.
I'm trying to think of what I can. How I started out, because you ended up saying you wouldn't deem to even consider that those people were affecting you.
That's right.
And indeed, it's your own self-interest that's provoking, or your own self-veneration, whatever we're saying.
If you're going to be, if you're proud, right? And some little pipsqueak takes issue with something that you've done. Does this affect you? I mean, if you're really, really proud, even if someone has the temerity to speak to you, which they shouldn't, of course.
Yeah, I get that.
What's the awakened quality here?
Pride for pride.
Yes, but what's a specific quality?
Dignity.
Close.
Equanimity.
Yeah. you're not disturbed by anything. Good, bad, you sail through it all. Everything's the same. Totally calm. Well, you have to go all the way here. You know, Nasruddin, some of you have heard me talk about him before. He was a magistrate on one occasion. Somebody, visitor to the town, came into the court, his underwear, and said, "I've been robbed. Somebody in your village. I want you to find the culprit and have my belongings returned." Took everything. Nasruddin looked down from the bench. "You're wearing your underwear, aren't you?" "Well, yes." "Well, he wasn't from our village. We do everything thoroughly around here." So Yidam meditation, you've got to be thorough about this, you know. No half measures. Julia.
I was inspired by Anita's question about Rittara, about
yes.
compassion and power. And yet when I was doing the meditation, I kept feeling like if I exerted my power, I wasn't being compassionate. So I wanted to give you some advice on...
What's your hang-up?
I want to be nice.
Ah, there you are.
I want to be kind.
Not the same thing at all. I had a group in Orange County many years ago. We were doing the Four Immeasurables. And there's a psychotherapist in the group who's a bit of a feisty character. And we, in the middle of the compassion, one of the meetings, I said, "Okay, so what does this look like in your life?" And he said, "Well, I just ended the relationship I'm in." And everybody else went, "Ooh." And she said, looked at everybody and said, "Oh, don't be so stupid. I was suffering, he was suffering. It was the compassionate thing to do." Not about being nice. Remember, compassion is the manifestation, the clarity of mind. We'll get a bit more into that tomorrow.
It turns out that Nectaris was affection.
Yes.
So what's the Vajra question?
That's for you to explore.
I was thinking about it.
Yes. You're going to seduce the whole world. Everybody? Yeah. That's how much. That's what the tower can do.
It seems like you were using God's joy of word.
You have another word?
I can't think of a persuade or convince.
It doesn't have the same juice, does it?
Well, magnetize might be good.
Seduce. Now, it gets all of that stuff that we're uncomfortable with, right? Why?
Well,
what?
What's
what?
Negative.
Don't you like being seduced?
Okay.
So it's not necessarily negative, is it?
No.
Do you like seducing people?
Sometimes.
Okay.
You're trying to seduce me into believing that? Okay. Page 21. How I live the practice. This is largely about deity practice. Now you'll notice on the opposite page there's a picture. The picture is a representation of the a particular practice in the Shankara tradition called the Five Tantric Deities. And then the two more, the two skeleton figures, are a form of protector. I'm not going to touch on those. And the red figure at the bottom is another Shankara deity. That's Tamdring, or Horsehead, who's an A1 demon basher, if any of you want to. He's great, just totally about bashing demons. The figure in the center is Chakrasambhara and his consort, Vajrayogini or Vajravarahi. The figure in the top left is the Lord of Mysteries, Brihasmaja. The figure to the right, top right, is Mahamaya, Lord of Illusion, Great Illusion, or the Master Magician. The figure in the bottom right is He Vajra, also known as Vajra Anger, Jedam Dorje. And the figure on the bottom left is Dorje Jeetje, or the Vajra Destroyer. Now, you have here what are basically the three classes of Yidams: peaceful, wrathful, or peaceful, semi-wrathful, and wrathful. Brihasamaja, or the Lord of Mysteries, in the top left, is peaceful. And I've said before, they're clothed as prince and princesses of the Pandarvan period of India. The next three, that is Chakrasambhara, Mahamaya, and Vajra, are semi-wrathful. They're vampires. That's what they are. Now, some of you have already experienced a bit of this, even though you've only been doing this practice for a short time. Feeling how the deity bites into you and drinks the blood of your pattern-based experience. Anybody have that experience? And then the wrathful, Dorje Jeetje and Tamdring, both are working very explicitly with the our reactive mind. It's our reaction in full flower, so to speak. Emotional reaction in full flower, experienced in complete awareness. And that's what you're practicing with. Now, initially, many people are drawn to wrathful deities because they have this very energetic quality about them. But most people find that the energy of the peaceful deities is actually a lot heavier. There is no room for escape there. This poem that I translated here is from the autobiography of one of the great Kagyu scholars, really, a person called Tsulop Trengwa. I think lived around the 16th, 17th century, somewhere around there. Not totally sure of the dates. But he wrote very, very extensive commentaries on Vajrayogini and a lot of other stuff. And sometime during the 3-year retreat, I came across his autobiography. And most autobiographies are long lists of empowerments they've received, and teachers they've gone to, and teachings they've studied, etc., etc. They really make for very interesting reading. But every now and then, in one of these biographies, you'll come across a real gem, which is actually the teacher talking about their own experience or their way of relating to practice. And this is Tsulop Trengwa. Always I worked hard at pure action so as not to waste fifth instructions. Although I haven't visited frightening burial grounds, I haven't seen any place more frightening than attitudes based on the poisons of the 5 reactive emotions and the 8 concerns about conventional success.
Is that a typo, Ken?
Yeah.
Though I haven't visited?
Yes. I haven't seen any place more frightening. That's a typo.
Should it be, although I have visited?
No, no. What he's describing is that he's always stayed in the monastery. He hasn't done the yogi trip going out and hanging out in charnel grounds.
Oh.
Says, even though I haven't gone there, I know what terror, I know what a frightening place is. This is a frightening place. And it's a way of emphasizing when you really understand the reactive emotions or the emotional reactions and how powerful those 8 worldly concerns are, you know, gain and loss and happiness and unhappiness and fame and obscurity and respect and disdain. These are the monsters that haunt you. Yes, Robert.
What happened to the 6th emotion?
Oh, they have different lists. There are the 6 realms and 6 reactive emotions, and then other times they prefer 5, so they just drop one. It's usually greed or pride or something. To these I applied practice the way rock meets bone. The 8 concerns dissolved like a rainbow, the poisons of reactive emotions became a friend, and thinking that attached to reactive emotions released itself into its own nature. That's his experience in practice. Not bad. Wherever I am, I engage secret actions. And secret actions has a wide range of meanings, but its primary meaning is working internally.
Working internally?
Internally. And the secret points of the Kagyu teachings, these are the epitome of the instructions. And one of the things about training in a tradition such as the Kagyu or any of the Tibetan traditions is you have practices which have been worked and reworked by people over centuries. And so formulations can be very, very precise and very, very concise. And that's what he's referring to. So you might just get a four-line verse from a teacher, which you can use in practice for several years. When I was with Nishu Kenpo in Santa Fe in 93, on one occasion, I was talking with him. It was approaching dinner time, and his wife was sort of stomping around the room in which we were having this interview, sort of banging pots, saying, "It's time for supper." Nishu Kimball said, "Shut up, I'm trying to give him something useful." And then he said, and I put this in the 10th chapter of the book, but it's an example of really concise instruction. Break the egg of existence. Break the egg of ignorance. Cut the web of existence. Open awareness like the sky. And then he gave me a brief explanation, but that was my instruction. It's very, very concise. Something you can just unravel, open up. Practice these secret points of the Kagyu teachings with everything that arises through the gates of the six sensory consciousnesses. And that's what he's going to describe in the rest of this poem. I know that everything, good and bad, is a friend of the natural. This refers to actually the point John was raising earlier, equanimity. When you have that level of equanimity, everything that arises illuminates understanding. It doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. Everything I do completes a short or medium power assembly. A power assembly is a particular form of ritual, which the purpose of which was to develop power, nourishing the power of the body through nourishing it with food, nourishing the senses with dance and song and poetry, and nourishing the mind with direct experience. Yeah. Power assembly. Tsokchi Korlo. Now, the reason I translated this power assembly is because Korlo here refers to the symbol of the universal monarch, the field. That's a symbol of power. So rather than use an illusion which nobody knows anything about, I just translate from the indirect one. Well, I sometimes get married. In the burial grounds of terrifying pattern-based existence. Why are they burial grounds? Because everything's dead there. Pattern-based existence, patterns have no awareness. They are completely mechanical processes. They're dead. So we live in that charnel ground. and terrifying. Does anybody have any questions about terrifying? Moving on. The cities of enchanting sensory pleasures. Well, we live in Los Angeles. Let me more be said. You know, LA is a great place to live for this. It's the only city, well, actually there's two now, there's Las Vegas. It's the two cities where illusion is reality.
I think there are more than two cities.
I know, but they do it so well, you know what I mean. The seclusion of transcending misery in the lesser ways. This is referring to the withdrawal from the world as a way of creating the conditions for being present. The forests of appearances that have no independent existence. Do you ever get lost in the world of appearances? Okay, so that's the setting ground, that's the context or the environment in which practice takes place. Chris?
I think I got the forest of appearances, but when you went to, it said that have no independent existence, I'm getting fuzzy.
What? You want me to hit you instead? Does the sound exist by itself? In and of its own right?
Yeah.
It does?
It's based on my experience.
You know, we go to Barclay. If there's nobody in this room, would anybody have heard a sound?
Okay.
But the sound of existence?
No.
No. See, Barclay was wrong. You know why Barclay was wrong? Because he was using that as a way of proving the existence of God. But since God doesn't exist, the argument falls apart. It's very simple. Everything that you experience, because things don't exist apart from what you experience. There is nothing except what you experience.
Right.
Okay? That's the appearances that have no independent existence. We impute independent existence.
I see.
Them.
Okay.
Okay. The practitioner who knows the nature of things. Now, in what I want you to feel here, rather than think about, is how Tsulak Trengwa is taking every aspect of practice and just immersing himself in it completely. Where is the top knot of respect and devotion for the teacher? Okay. Now, if you look at the central figure, Jakasambhara, in the painting, you see how he's got this hair tied up. Okay. They always wear their hair that way. It's always like that. That's how you respect and devotion for the teacher is. It's always there. It's always right with you. And that's what's being expressed here. And this is the process of deity meditation. These qualities are just right with you. You're living them all the time. It's not a case of visualizing them or understanding the symbology. Those are the steps into it. What the meaning is that you're living this, really living. The wheel of stable awakening mind. Now, on top of Chakrasambhara, there's a right at the top of the top knot. There's a bone wheel through which the hair is pulled and pulled down over the side. That's that. And that symbolizes stable awakening mind, bodhicitta. The earrings of knowing sound is empty. The necklace of the Vajra recitation of spells, mantras. the bracelets of the three vows, the ashes of self-arising understanding, and the belt of compassion and modesty. So this is a way of talking about things that, you know, this is how you go out in the world, this is how you dress. Put on the belt of compassion and modesty, you know, rub on the ashes. This is from the old Sadhu tradition of self-arising understanding, and so forth. This is how you go out in the world. Now, what would it be like if you went out into the world like this? How different?
You'd be very public with your practice.
Would you be public with your practice?
You'd be knowing of the nature of things
all the time. Yeah. Not about being public. Pardon? Yeah.
No sound is empty.
Right.
Self-arising understanding.
Now let's just take this, knowing the sound is empty. Knowing that everything that you heard had no intrinsic existence or meaning. And what difference might that make?
Well, you have reactivity.
Yeah. Cut through an awful lot of reactivity right there, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I trust you worked with it yesterday. It's all right when they're playing music. It's when they have a bad rock band. They can have some really bad bands up here.
That was pretty bad.
On the next page. By the way, somebody told me 15:15. What time is it now?
5:00.
Okay. I hold the staff that is union of method and understanding. So method and understanding, this is the shorthand for being able to see how things are, that's the understanding or the wisdom aspect, and doing what's appropriate, that's the method part. As the former Canadian High Commissioner to India, who's a serious student of Buddhism, said, skillful means whatever works. But you have that with you, just like, you know, you walk with a staff, helps them. You have that quality of understanding and clarity and effectiveness always right there. You don't have to reach for it. And sound the hand drum of indestructible original sound. Now you see that, you can't quite see it on this. But the skull cup, you know, cut off the top of the head, empty it out, that's a cup. Popular image. Skull cup that preserves the bliss of retention. And the bliss of retention is from transforming sexual energy so that it's transformed directly into attention and awareness. I eat the ambrosia of whatever arises in the six sensory consciousnesses, which is all sensory experience. And as we know from the sensory deprivation experiments which were done in McGill University in the late 50s, early 60s, we actually need sensory experience, otherwise we go nuts. It is a form of food. And one of the things that some of you are probably doing this afternoon is just sitting out there, and you do nothing. Well, I told you to do nothing, but what you are actually doing, at least part of what you're doing, is just soaking up sensory experience. It's nourishing. And one time when we were up here, we did a whole afternoon of ecstatic practice. Nobody ate anything for dinner. Everybody was full. Quench my thirst with the poison of attachment to duality. Now, one of my favorite teachers is Lama Karma Tunle in Toronto. He's a wonderful person, a little eccentric. Maybe why I like him. But he was in California once, and a friend of Dan and mine, Michael Conklin, was driving him out to give a talk in Grass Valley, which at that time was a hippie hangout with lots of people in ultra-pure Hindu trips and so forth. And they already had a considerable discomfort because they knew Lama Karma Tenmi was Tibetan, and they had to prepare some meat. So they cooked a meat pie or something like that. So Lama Karma Tenmi gets out there, and everybody's there sort of tiptoeing around trying to be respectful, and you've got all of this stuff going on. And something gone wrong, and there was only a little bit of food available, meat anyway. Lama Karma Tenmi looked up and said, "I want more." And then he gave this totally nonsensical and incomprehensible talk on astrology. And proceeded to make some rather pointed comments about a number of people's hang-ups and relationships. He's a very perceptive guy. And everybody was just incensed. And they left. And on the way back, Michael said, "Lama Karma Tenmi, what on earth are you doing there? I thought Dharma was about promoting peace and understanding, etc." He said, Lama Karma took the mic and said, "Oh, you Americans, you want everything to be nice. Sometimes it's just better to stir it all up and drink it." So, quench my thirst with the poison of attachment to duality. Okay? Everybody wants to move beyond experiencing things with duality, right? That's why you're all here. How do you do it? Well, here's a method. Accentuate the sense of duality. Make it as vivid as possible. How does it feel? I'm here and you're there. There's this big gulf between us. It's never going to be bridged. You are totally on the other side of that. How does it feel? Keep going.
Well, to me, it's a damn.
Yeah. And so you go right into it. And you can try that, see where you end up. That's drinking the poison. Extract nourishment from the aconite of reactive emotions.
Did
you say aconite? Pardon?
Did
you say aconite? Yeah, it's aconite. It's a poison.
Well, I know it's
Yeah, I know.
It's
your evil. Yeah, but no, it's a very well-known poison in the Tibetan. It is actually aconite. It's a very powerful herbal poison. It's a plant, right?
Yeah,
monkshood. Okay. It's the same thing. And many of you know this practice. When you're angry, what do? Yeah, move right into it. You eat it, you drink it, you really experience it. It's Vajrayana approach. The fact that they do it in the Theravada tradition doesn't make any difference. Okay. I wander in the state of no coming or going. Well, there are a few of you hanging out there these days. The zombies of appearances of the eight concerns.
No.
The walking dead. Gain, loss, happiness, unhappiness, fame, obscurity, respect, disdain. You base your life on these, it's like Night of the Living Dead. The cannibal demons of compliance with social convention. How many of you have been eaten by these demons? All those who value nice, hold up your hands. The sirens of meaningful projects to undertake.
Siren is actually a Tibetan word.
It has the same meaning. I chose siren because it is a form of demon that seduces you with beautiful song. So it's a siren. Mm-hmm. The whole, yes?
When was this written?
This is written, I think, in the 16th, 17th century, maybe a little earlier than that. Fine.
I'm just curious.
The whole crowd of emotional reactions to anything that arises. Yes, well, we all know about that. But when you wander in the state of no coming and going, all of these become your servants and are swept away in the vast ocean of pure being. The inner heat of the single stroke that arises spontaneously, that's a reference to the practice of Tummo, which is energy transformation, which produces an internal sensation of warmth, and a few other things. I rely on as the self-arising seal of commitment. There's a whole body of teaching in this tradition on the four seals, which are degrees of engagement with what is ultimately true. I'm not going to go into it any further than this. The freshness of any appearance that arises, I rely on without clinging as a seal of experience. Now, he goes into how earlier he said, with everything that arises through the gates of the sixth sense, applying the practice, everything that arises through the gates of the six sensory consciousnesses. This is how it's done in the Adam practice. The sense of sight, Chittagarbha, which is one of the six bodhisattvas, meets Vajra form, whatever appears as form. So you have the faculty of sight and you have the object of sight, and they meet. What happens when they meet?
Perception experience?
Yeah, you experience. Okay. And this is represented by the union of the bodhisattva and the consort Vajra form. Now, in union, there's no duality. And ordinarily we think of, you know, here's the object, here's the consciousness. And we think of them as separate, you know, I'm experiencing that. But that's not actually the case. There is just the experience which arises. And because of our dualistic framework, we split it into consciousness and object. And what we're doing through this form of practice is dissolving that projected duality. And then he goes through the other. This meeting in which form and emptiness are inseparable, I rely on as the supreme seal of activity. So he's actually going through the various seals. Then he goes through the rest of the senses. The sense of hearing, Vajrapani, plays with Vajra sound, the faculty of smell, Akashagarbha, another one, embraces Vajra aroma, sense of taste, avalokiteshvara, joyfully embraces vajra flavor. The sense of thought, manjushri, joins with vajra experience. The sense of touch, samanta vajra, is one with vajra touch. And in the elaborate forms of these practices, you actually visualize deities in sexual union in each of the senses. In the eyes, in the nose, in the tongue. I can't remember where they're situated in the body. And in the ears. Yes?
Ken, sorry to be so basic here. When you say sexual union, it means one is masculine and one is feminine?
Yes.
Which is masculine and which is feminine?
The bodhisattvas are the masculine, and that those are the consciousnesses, and the sense objects are the feminine. And so you have vajra form, vajra sound, vajra aroma, vajra flavor, vajra experience, and vajra touch are all the feminine. Pride is buddha lochana, angry thinking is mamaki, desire is pandara vasini, sini, jealousy is original tara, and instinct is dati vishvari. Now, these are the names of the five buddha consorts. These are the reactive emotions. All these I enjoy without taking or pushing them away. So this again is using the symbol of sexual union, but this is exactly what we've already talked about. You embrace the emotions, you join with them, not letting them take you over, not pushing them away, but actually experiencing them completely. That transforms the experience. That transforms the reactive emotion. And that's why the reactive emotions are given the names of the Buddha consorts, that they're transformed into the experience of awareness, direct awareness and presence. This, I think, is the highest seal of activity. You know, that's the best thing you can be doing, because then you're transforming all of your reactivity into pristine awareness. Nobody else has to experience it. Pardon? Thank you. In non-referential great compassion, emptiness supreme in all aspects is naturally present, arising on its own, neither joined nor separate. I rely on the totality of experience as the supreme seal of Mahamudra. And the rest of it is pretty straightforward. You can see how through this the whole flavor of deity practice is as a way of entering completely into whatever's arising in experience. And we start off, and I started off this morning asking you to pick an identity, because we have all of these different ways of relating to the things, and the consequence of that is that we don't experience things completely. So I bring it all together in one identity and use that one identity, the Yidam, to really engage experience completely. Now, is this frightening? Absolutely. It's terrifying, because it's the death of the reactive patterns. They can't function in this environment, not the way they're used to function at all. And we are heavily invested in many of the behaviors and personalities of that, and so, and many of this has come up already in the interviews. So go out and relate that way, and people go, can't do that, not allowed to do that. Well, there's your conditioning coming. And this approach is, and it's very much like, in all the literature it says, you become the Yidam. It's not true. The Yidam becomes you. It takes you over. You don't survive. That's why they're vampires.
So that's why you said that when you start a certain way, you're still going back.
That's right. Very true. Once you start on this path, you can't go back. Because you come back as the half-dead. And that's not a very good way to go about your life. Okay. Let's take a few questions. Darn. There's a shuttle service for anybody who wants to. Susan.
So basically, tonight, just keep going deeper.
Yep. Is that okay? Yeah. I mean, just keep working with the identity, the forms that you've chosen, and really experience it. In addition to that, we're going to have supper now. You're at that yidam eating. You're walking around. You're that yidam walking around. You are that all the time. Not just when you're practicing. All the time. When you go to sleep, when you get up, when you brush your teeth, when you wash your face. Everything. You are that. Other questions?
Well, now I'm a bit confused because I feel like I've been doing the wrong thing here. I kind of chose this embodiment or symbol, and I was actually getting a lot of benefit from thinking of myself as being red.
Yeah, red.
But I don't. I wasn't working with seduction. I was working with compassion and power.
That's fine.
I can still be red.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. Seductresses don't have a monopoly on red. Yeah. Kurukula, who's the top seductress, she's red. Amitabha, he's red. Yeah. And there's a great deal of similarity, just different manifestation. It's fine. Thumdring, he doesn't exactly do much seducing. He's red.
So, this is a pretty remedial question. Bear with me. So, the vampire just completely sucks this reactivity out of you. You just totally burn it out by doing it to the point where you see how destructive it is. And you're not there anymore.
Right. No, it's not. I mean, when we were first introduced to this, we would hear all these words. But, I mean, I think a lot of us didn't have any idea of the meaning. Right, Dan?
Absolutely true.
Thank you. You know, and as I've said several times, my intention here is for you to get repeating it. And I don't want you to get the concept, oh, something is sucking all of the stuff. I mean, that's a way of stepping back from it. You do this by letting yourself be the symbol that you've chosen, whatever it is. You just be it completely. And you will experience the blood draining out of the patterns. Now, is blood draining out of the patterns a pleasant experience? Carolyn?
No. Those vampire movies, they always kind of get into it.
The vampires get into it.
Yeah.
You're the victim.
I know, the victim.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's Hollywood. What do you expect?
So, in what sense is the vampire? I mean, what the instruction was that we are the awakened form of this reactive
right.
emotion.
Yeah.
I'm disconnecting.
No, I mean you can work out it that side. I just want you to be in. I don't want you to conceptualize it. I want you to be in it and just feel what happens and just feel the whole thing. Don't think about it too much. That takes you out of it. So be this awakened form and feel what happens. I mean, for instance, which one are you working with, if you're comfortable saying so, Deborah?
Not by my choice. I would like to say that first.
Oh, this is going to come back on you so hard. Go ahead.
It already has.
Yeah, okay.
Eros.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Okay.
Oh, duh. You forgot.
Yeah, well, there's a few people here. Okay. So, be her right now. Right now. Completely. Changes a few things, doesn't it? Right? How does it feel? You're going to make everybody in this room do exactly what you want. That is, you're master seductress. You have that capability every moment. How do you feel?
That wasn't my take.
I know. How do you feel right now?
It's different.
Yeah, but how do you feel?
Not very good.
That's the blood draining out of the reactive patterns. Okay. You follow? What was your take on it? It has many dimensions, of course.
Well, I was taking it as the awakened form of that, and finding, you know, where is the gift in this quality? Where is the awareness and presence and empowerment?
Yeah.
That can
much too
people.
Much in your head. Much too much in your head. You've got to get right into it. You follow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're not going to find what is awake there by thinking about it. It'll only be an idea, and ideas have no power in this world. Dan?
One other dimension of this practice, I mean, as you said, we learned it, you know, we didn't know much. But one thing that our retreat mom said at the beginning, you go through, you know, it's probably both the yin or the month.
Well, we were trained in about a dozen different yidams, so just month here, month there. Mm. Pretty soon you didn't know who you were.
But he said one thing that I forgot most things, but one thing he said it did stick was that just by doing it, you will build up a relationship.
Exactly.
And I was going, I was not encouraged at this point. But that actually did happen.
It does.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That actually did happen, a relationship, not for all of them, but, you know, for...
Many of them, yeah.
Yeah, it does happen. That's the first question. Okay.
When you say a relationship, I'm sorry to ask.
Go ahead.
When you say relationship, what do you mean? Because to some degree, I would think you're inseparable. So... what's the relationship?
Well, I suppose it would be on a relative level of being inseparable. Well, you have a feeling. It's a feeling.
It's a bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at first it's like meeting a person. Chris, this is Dan. Dan, this is Chris. Now, you get a certain impression of Dan, right?
Oh, I see.
But then you and Dan sit down and talk. Now you begin to get a feeling of Dan.
Okay.
But Niyadama goes much further. After a while, you think, I wonder what it's like to be Dan. Now you've got to get to know Dan a lot. And then, much to your consternation, Dan's taken you over.
Dan.
Last question.
Well, this does sound to me a lot like an archetype. You know, because you know the archetypal energy,
yeah.
It is really pure. And I've dealt with the, you know, like the seductive energy.
Yeah.
And it is with a, you know, not me, but another.
No, of course not. I'm not going to buy that one.
But yes, it's really when it's really crystallized, it just sounds like a, what we're
yeah.
working with.
But yeah, okay. We're going to do the. Prayers now. Great Father and Daughter.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you do wish to use a part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.